Srivikash Tehel is an Asia-Pacific leader, technical elite team for data, warehouse, and cloud for data in IBM India. He has over 20 years of experience leading several technical and leadership roles across product development, cross-business unit collaborations, and global system integrators. He is an Open Group Level 3 certified specialist in data and AI technologies with experience across various industry verticals. He specializes in Watson cognitive products, advanced analytics, advanced visualizations, data warehouse, and data integration technologies. He has enriched architectured cognitive and analytics solutions for multiple customers across telco, banking, insurance, aviation, and healthcare industries in India and global clients for IBM. He has a rich background of product architecture and product development experience on portfolio assets across IBM Watson, IBM SPSS, IBM Cognos, IBM DB2, and IBM WebSphere. May I now request Srivikash Tehel to kindly deliver his talk.
So the first slide I really want to present is two of my classmates who were in forces, who are martyred now. Because I'm addressing a very unique and august audience, I really want to start by acknowledging my batchmates that I've been very closely associated from my childhood, studying together. Lieutenant Ravinder Chikara, Kirti Chakra. He was killed in action in Kashmir, and Flight Lieutenant Sandeep Palarwa. He was flying a JAG that met with an accident in Ambala. And I'm really proud of all of my batchmates that you see on the slide now, who started as cubs with POS, right? The small ones that you see on the left corner. And today they are officers with Josh, right? So that's how you see them today. Really, really proud of them. Really, really proud of all of you. So with that, let me get on with the session today. I'm going to cover something called cognition and AI. And I think the format of the session is that I can probably be answering questions at a later point of time. So I have a lot of slides to cover and share with you. So let me get going. What cognition state of the art today is highlighted by a set of newspaper cuttings that I put on the slide here, wherein IBM actually has designed a debater system wherein a machine can take arguments for and against a topic, and it can actually argue with humans, right? And this is something which we have launched. The time when these cuttings were there was launched as a prototype from a research point of view. Today it is fully functioning service that we offer. This is not a commercial aspect that I'm telling, but it is aspect of where cognition has gone now, that it can start debating with humans on subtle points around a topic for or against. This is where the cognition state of the art is today. And we're really going ahead, and this is going to evolve much further when you marry to the newer concepts around quantum computing, etc. But before we go ahead, let's all be clear that so we keep hearing that, you know, computers will take over and there'll be a Terminator kind of a scenario, etc. See, the scenario today we are in is that the computers have already taken over, right? And let me say by pointing this out, this is the computer. We all know it as a mobile phone because that's the way we use it. But it's actually a computer today if you know it, right? A computer today that you're using has taken us over already, right? You get a notification that you are looking at this computer. The thing that we say or we have found is that they are too stupid as of now, right? We really need to make them smart. Cognition and AI will be one of those ways to make it smarter. I'm not saying this computer that I pointed is not smart, but I think it can be smarter. So I think there'll be a lot of session that would have happened by now. What is AI? But let me give you a different point of view to that. If I was to really, you know, draw a grid around, how we can put it together in a mathematical kind of a way, a logical way of how we define AI, is let's say we had a grid of thought and behavior and human and rational. I think what we are trying to achieve is something like we're thinking AI will be a system that can think like human. AI would be a system that can think rationally. It'll be a system that can act like humans, and a system that can act rationally. So on the act part and thought part, there is rationality and it should be able to think like humans. But if you look at it, this whole concept of putting it together this way, and this is what you would have heard by now, I think this is not cognition. If I look at the state of the art today and the way different type of softwares and hardware exist today to really be able to deal with this, it's called inferential statistics. What we are looking for is something different. Today, the way AI exists is something similar to what I'm showing you on the slide now. What that means is it is actually trying to solve a mathematical problem. And mathematical problem is if I have to oversimplify what AI state of the art is something like the equation that is shown there. That if you take an image of a handwritten number like 3, right? And you use a generic machine learning algorithm and you pass it through the algorithm. What's happening in AI today is you already know the target that you need to identify, that is number 3, but you're actually trying to find the value of X here as well as given a value of M and B. Now, I don't want to get into the equation part, but what is happening is this equation is self-adjusting equation in a way system. Then you start from, if you look at the chart at the right bottom, you're starting from some of these corners or maybe at some point of time in this wave kind of thing. And then you're trying to solve this equation to arrive at the optimal values of MXB such that you are at the minimum point, the lowest point where probably you are the nearest to identifying 3. So when we keep hearing about these are unsupervised and the machine learning or deep learning, etc., in essence, it is given a target, and the way training is happening now, the way AI is happening now is that you're just trying to fit numbers into this, and you're trying to fit it in a sequential fashion, such a way that you get to the lowest point in that graph. As soon as you reach there, you believe, or the system starts believing, that it has trained itself. That is what is happening. But I think there are areas in AI, there is a lot more dependency that is still not really mature enough to really take it to the place where it can actually be augmented as a decision management system for humans. If you look at the chart here, AI has dependence on search, because the way we consume news today or views today or anything to do around search, knowledge, etc., it starts with search, right? You go to one of the engines for search like Google, Microsoft, or any Yahoo or any of the other ones, where you start by searching something, right? Then that search will result into a natural language processing, NLP for short, which in turn will be collated with some machine learning. There'll be some logic around it. But I think where we are lacking today in this AI dependence kind of a chart is knowledge representation, right? Knowledge is not represented in an easy manner that any organization can actually pick up something and improvise on that and use it for there. So AI is kind of very narrow today, because you have search capability, you have logic capability, you're hearing NLP, natural language processing, you have machine learning algorithms, the vision is also there. Somewhere down the line, planning and robotics have also come in. So you would have heard and looked at a lot of robots that are there, that are getting trained using AI. There are different types of there are humanoid robots also, and there are a few Google videos that you can see. Even I have trained one of the robots called Now using AI that we have in the software lab here in Bangalore. But I think where we're lacking is knowledge representation of this whole thing in such a way that it can result into an expert system. Now, this is what I call, when you have all of this together, that is what is called inferential reasoning. So AI essentially has to mature from an inferential statistics to an inferential reasoning kind of thing. And that must have confused you, saying, we have heard all those different sessions and suddenly somebody comes and says, we are actually not there in AI. Let me try and give it with an example where AI has to be. Now, this is an example I'm giving from a system that IBM designed in about 7 to 8 years ago, we had made a system which could actually play a game called Jeopardy. And in that game, the way the game is played is that you give clues to the system, and based on the clues that are given, the system actually figures out what kind of question you are asking, who are you talking about, etc. It's a reverse mechanism to search. So let's say, now to clarify to you what inferential reasoning means, let's say we give a question. In May 1898, Portugal celebrated the 400th anniversary of the explorers' arrival in India. And we give the supporting evidence in the form of, in May, Gary arrived in India after he celebrated his anniversary in Portugal. Now, the way today, the state of the art in inferential statistics, the way it works is, celebrated will be matched with celebrated as a keyword hit kind of a thing. May will be matched to May as a, again, a keyword kind of a hit. Anniversary will be matched to anniversary, right? And then India will be mapped to India. And then probably you may say, what we are talking about is Gary. Right? This is the state of the art today, because the way algorithms work today is this. What we want them to go to AI, inferential reasoning will be something of this sort. So if I was to give the same question, but the supporting evidence, I change it to say on the 27th of May, 1498, Vasco da Gama landed in Cappert Beach. And then if you were to really do it in a reasoning way, what will happen is that you would do the reasoning in a multi-layered fashion. The legend of the right actually tries to show that the first reasoning you would do is temporal. The way humans think is the first matching we do on any set of data or any kind of reasoning we're given is based on time. So you do a temporal reasoning and say, the 400th anniversary given a date, from 1498 would be 1898. So it'll figure that out. So it is reasoning, it is not matching, right? So it does the first matching. Then it does a statistical paraphrasing. So it doesn't match word to word, but it matches paraphrases together, saying maybe arrival and landed means the same thing. Then it does a geospatial reasoning. So it says, how does Cappert Beach match to India? Well, if you look at the geospatial layers and you see the hierarchy of data, you will see India, then you'll see states, within states you'll see beaches, etc. And somewhere these will match. So geospatial reasoning will match the India and Cappert Beach. And then you get the answer, Vasco da Gama. So you would see here, it is not a statistical approach, the way current state of the art is. It is actually an inferential reasoning approach that where AI has to mature. There are systems that have been built. IBM already has that in the form of what we call as an IBM Watson. And I'm sure there are other vendors also who are building. But I think for you as an audience, you should always be able to differentiate that deep learning, machine learning, and all that essentially should result into an inferential reasoning that becomes an expert system, which leads to a decision making, which can augment a human decision cycle. Now, where are we in the level of artificial intelligence? To keep it simple, rather than spending too much time on this slide, we are at the bottom. We're still at the weak AI, narrow AI level. I think the general AI, the strong AI is still a little far off, wherein it has some kind of consciousness as well as self-awareness. We're really, really far off from there. I mean, contrary to what you may read keep hearing, but I think we're still at the narrow AI and a weak AI stage, far, far away from super intelligence, right? Where are we in the AI journey today? Is we started, from programmed insight kind of thing. And those used to be called as data warehouses. So you would dump data into a storage. From that data, you will program your data queries and you will get insight out of that. Then it has matured into a layer called the business intelligence layer, BI layer for short. Those are modeled insights. So there is a way you can model the kind of queries you would ask a system. And through that kind of a modeled insight, rather than having to write queries, You can build dashboards and information insight visualizations based on business intelligence layer. Currently, we are at the neural net insight stage, wherein the neural nets is the most used approach to train a deep learning system, and that leads to certain insights. And I'll show you examples of that. In future, we're going to go to a quantum era. There'll be a quantum-driven machine learning kind of an approach, and I'll share a few slides around what that will look like. this is the kind of road we are at right now, and we are at the neural net stage. I think one of the interesting things to note is that artificial intelligence as a word, this is a Google trend chart based on the search or the buzzwords that people look for. AI per se as a word was already popular by about 2014. It was getting asked a lot. But I think when a lot of these things have come together, let's say around 2015, when big data has come in, right, you have a whole lot of data available to you, complex enough that you cannot use any of the existing tools like Excel sheet or any of the human usable tools that allow you to shift through the data, get insight out of that. That is big data. When the big data came around with machine learning algorithm and deep learning algorithm applied to this big data, that is when this has actually taken off. We are, if we were to draw a hype cycle for data science, that is the programming paradigm that we use to train an AI system, is somewhere around this chart. The way it happens is that every technology that has gone through in the past as well as probably in the future is going to go through this kind of a hype cycle. So it starts on the left with an innovation trigger, and then it gets into a peak of inflated expectation. Then we get into a disillusionment, and then slowly we get enlightenment, and then productivity starts. If you look at the tech that is underlying as the building block for AI today, I think we are at a stage wherein deep learning, machine learning are at a peak of inflated expectation. I don't foresee the same set of approaches that we hear today and that you may have heard in some of the earlier sessions going to carry on much further. I think over a period of time, there will be a disillusionment as well as enlightenment period wherein there'll be newer techniques found out to really mature the AI into a productivity kind of a technology. So what does the current AI look like? Current AI looks like purely from laying it out perspective, there are three things that you'll keep hearing. One is AI. AI is like the universe. And then under that is machine learning, and a specific type of machine learning is deep learning, right? AI per se started much earlier, by the way, right? Deep learning and machine learning are one of the approaches to have AI. Let me say this, may sound a pretty controversial thing to you, contrary to what you may keep hearing. AI doesn't need to be achieved only by deep learning and machine learning. It's a very profound statement to make, but let me make that. AI has been existing, if you look at the timeline chart there, since 1950s, and machine learning, deep learning algorithms and approaches did not even come on the scene till about 1980s. So we have to be able to distinguish that AI is very overarching thing. Machine learning, deep learning as a building block are recent phenomena. Probably, as I showed you on the previous chart, in a hype cycle scenario, they may peter down, and then you may have a newer kind of set of building blocks coming together. Probably half a minute kind of a thing. What is machine learning? In a simplistic way, there is two stages to a machine learning. You train the machine learning algorithm, and then you use that to predict something. So training is based on you give it data, you give it to a learning algorithm that learns the kind of equation I had showed you earlier to actually come at the minima point of that graph, so that you have trained what we call as trained weights in a machine learning algorithm. And then you send it a fresh set of data, then it runs the learned model from the equation that I mentioned earlier, and then gives a prediction. This is what in a very simplistic scenario machine learning is. But there are different approaches to this. There are supervised approaches wherein you have the data, but you label the data. For example, the kind of data that exists, let's say, for an employer record. You will have employer ID, employee name, address, etc. And then that is a data which is labeled. Every column of data has meaning to it. It is labeled, and the machine learning algorithm knows what the data is all about. It is task driven. Mostly prediction models are built using that. There is the unsupervised learning. So wherein only in a hierarchy of objects, on the higher object is actually labeled, the others are not. So for example, in vision kind of a algorithm that are done today for AI, wherein you identify an object, it is unsupervised because you will say this is a cat, this is a dog, but you will not say that the cat and dog actually have legs, ears, etc. That is made out by the algorithm based on patterns of unlabeled data. It is usually data driven, and it actually results into a descriptive kind of model. I think the most popular one now, and that is actually leading to a lot of promise, wherein we don't have to label data or prepare too much of data, is based on reinforced learning. This is the one that is caught on really, really well in recent years, especially a lot of articles that you keep hearing about the computers defeating the humans on complex set of strategy games are based on reinforced learning. Even the autonomous car kind of tech that is being built is based on reinforced learning, etc. So you have a learning based on a feedback and a reward kind of a cycle. So you give a feedback to the algorithm, this is good, this is bad, and based on the reward given, it will actually learn this is a good action to do, this is not, etc. So it is reacting to an environment, and it is based on a trial and error approach. So this in brief was the machine learning. But deep learning per se is part of the machine learning as a field, right? It is exceptional at learning patterns. So it can learn patterns of data. This is what it is really, really good at, right? And it derives meaning out of the data by using the hierarchy of multiple layers of the data. So when you say multiple layers, the way, let's say, vision algorithms work today to really identify something as a warship, aircraft, versus just normal automobile, is that it will build its own hierarchy, saying a warship has these features, and probably it is mostly seen around with water, maybe blue color or shades of blue. It will learn all that. You don't have to really specify to the deep learning algorithm. It will build the hierarchy of that data layers, and it tries to mimic a neural network. So each neural in the network has each neural, so to simplify it further, each neural net is actually running, each neural in the net is running the equation I showed you earlier, and it is trying to solve itself to identify a specific thing or a specific layer. So it's like a mini brain kind of a thing, that the way it is designed. And more data you give it, the better it is. So you don't need feature engineering. In a data science kind of perspective, feature engineering is nothing but actually labeling the data and telling the system this data is, this is leg, this is ear, this is cat, right? You don't need to do that. You probably just need to do at a very higher level, this is what this object is. Go learn all the hierarchy objects of this higher thing. Now, the perspective on AI, machine learning and DL, deep learning, is that today we are in the modern AI side of it, the right side. The traditional AI was based on feature engineering, wherein you had to really tag the data. You had to tell the system this is what the data means. Now, human annotated data was there, and it was based on sequential computing. What has happened on modern AI is that the data, when it is given to the system, it builds a hierarchical model, the way I discussed in the previous slide. The data can be unlabeled, right? And it can make multiple decisions simultaneously, right? It doesn't have to just go in a sequential fashion. So today the AI looks like this. So you'll be amazed that this face is of a person who doesn't exist actually, right? This is not a real image. This is an image that is generated by an AI system. There is a website for it, and I think you all can search for that website on the search engine of your preference. I think the name of the website itself is "This Person Does Not Exist." Just search for it, and you'll see. It is generating these faces on the fly. So imagine that today you have an AI system that has an ability to generate new designs. It might as well be a new design for some item that you are interested in. In a simplistic fashion, this is face. Tomorrow, it can be a complex thing as design an engine. In fact, there are newer designs that have been mated between a generative form of AI and a 3D printer in such a way, instead of actually a leg-based design for a chair, a mesh-based design was selected by AI and 3D printing, and actually found to be most stable. So the current state of the AI is starting to generate things. It is able to generate its own data. It is able to generate new things. The second one I want to highlight is this. This is an AI assistant. So I think you keep hearing about chatbots being used on different websites and mobile phone, etc. I think we look at it in a different fashion. We look at it as a cognition thing. From a cognition point of view, chatbot and everything is nothing but a digital assistant to you, right? So AI is actually forming an assistant to you. This is on. This is a picture taken from the International Space Station. This is a picture of an AI assistant that has been designed by IBM, and it is running our Watson set of technologies inside. And it is used by the astronauts on the space station to interact, get more information, etc., rather than having to type every time. Right? Not to say that you can't type. You already see one of the laptops there, but this is more like interactive AI assistant, which will be used to augment the task you are doing as a human. And given the daily task that astronauts are assigned, they can't be clicking on keyboards every time they have to take up a task. They might as well get all the details from an AI assistant. The reinforced learning is very, very promising, as I said in one of the earlier slides. I'll show you some of the examples. Reinforced learning, this is an example of a robo finger, wherein it is actually able to balance the cube, then it is going towards solving the Rubik's cube, right? It does find and learn the moves to be able to, you know, probably balance it in the air, catch it in the air. You can imagine catching in the air is all about predicting the trajectory of the object, then predicting where it is going to land, then also predicting that based on the size, what your grip has to be. Your grip is too soon, it may go out. You grip it too slow, then this may slip out. You grip it too fast with too hard kind of energy applied, then this may crash. So the robots are, or robo hands per se, are being actually trained using reinforced learning. They are not getting trained by only programs alone. They are being trained by actions today. AI is obviously at the edge. I'm not talking about that, but this phone, especially the iPhones and some of the latest Android devices, they are so, so powerful in the memory composition that you have, the storage composition. I think there are micro SD cards today that have ability to store 1 terabyte of data. Imagine a micro SD card. This is profound, given IBM had designed external storage devices. I think the 5 MB device that we initially designed was to be taken around in a container, right, in a shipping container. Today you have AI happening at the edge. When you talk to Siri, Alexa, and all these AI assistants, when you talk to Google and you find maps, that is an AI thing that is happening at the edge when it is routing you, finding out where the traffic condition is, etc. So what you will see more and more often is that AI doesn't actually have to happen on cloud or in a big way with some big infrastructure, big set of machines, etc. It can even happen on your edge. More and more wearable devices will be there, like the watch, the smart watches that are there. You might actually see newer set of devices come up. I think for the audience here, especially officers from Navy, I think edge is pretty much important for you guys, because when I say edge, it means you might as well be running a supercomputer on your ship itself, right? AI can be happening at the edge. It doesn't have to be spread across needing really, really big infrastructure all the time. The other thing that's really, really catching on is AI for AI. The market word for it is auto AI, right? So what AI for AI does is it automates the AI development process, right? And it actually goes from, earlier it was weeks, months, now it is done in a minute. What that means is today I don't actually have to write a piece of code to really train an AI system. You give me a new piece of data. I'm talking about the Watson set of technology that IBM has. I'm sure the other vendors also have that. is the capability wherein, given the data, the system will complete the whole cycle of the development, and the AI will actually train AI. So there is higher level of AI, at least an abstracted level of AI today, on the development cycle that has been developed, that actually does this whole cycle that you have shown on the left side, when it has to take this whole step of cleaning the data, engineering the data, selecting the right model or the algorithm, then optimize the parameter, validate the model, then deploy it, then monitor it at run. All of that can be done by AI today. So we have automated the whole AI development lifecycle itself. This is one of the very, very new trend that is catching on. It is getting into a fashion when AI can actually train itself on the edge using an auto AI. So as an example, if I was to give you the way language models are taught today, and you would find some of these language AI systems like Siri, Alexa, and others, what they're doing is they're training the data on the edge device. So when you use this phone, and if you're using a speaker, it might as well be recording your voice and actually running a model on the edge device itself and training a language model to identify the words faster. You would have seen that the services offered by some of these tech companies, including ours, did not have a really good speech-to-text kind of an engine for, let's say, an Indian accent, right? Or even recognizing speech in an Indian accent, or with all the regional languages and dialects, etc. But in recent times, you know, past couple of years, and especially within the last 1 year, the models that have been developed around speech technology on AI, they actually have been trained to such an extent that even when you speak Hindi, you're able to catch them well. You're able to catch them well with all different dialects of that, right? Why that has happened? Because you have never been sending the data. And I think for all the armed forces, that's a big concern, that how is the data being controlled? Now, you never realize that you actually are not sending the data. The latest technique is you are interacting with an edge device, whether it is a watch, phone, or whatever is the smart device you may be using. That edge device is running an auto AI, which is using your data and training the model on the edge itself. It is the model or the metadata of the model or the speech it has learned that is being sent back to the cloud. So what is happening is, from a rule and law perspective, I think your data is never leaving the device. You're not actually, basically you are within the law by using the data, and the data is not probably going out of your geographical boundaries. But by the way, it is the metadata or the learning that AI system has done based on your speech parameters that is actually going out, right? That is what the auto AI kind of a thing has done. I think if you look at it, the auto AI essentially is, this is just an example, not to scare anyone or give a point of view, but this is more to do with how do we see this evolving in future? I think evolution of this in future would be, imagine a scenario wherein you have your assets out there in the high seas, and then they themselves can be acting as nodal devices in such a way that the ships themselves are learning to operate in an environment, and they are learning rather than you having to, you know, bring all the data on to shore and then, you know, processing it further and then collating it. I think pretty much within the next decade, we will see a scenario wherein the edge devices on the assets that are out there will train themselves using auto AI, and they will be collaborating to really be able to take care of the learning. So for example, one may have a high bandwidth that will train based on data, then that will take the trainings, pass it on to the other ones. That's where I was saying, if there is a good mechanism to represent knowledge, and we call them as knowledge graphs, you would be able to pass it on to the other one to the other one, and in a networked fashion, you actually would be able to do auto AI while you're deployed. This is just a screenshot of auto AI is explanatory also. So you're actually able to see the IBM system, and we call it Cloud Pak for Data. I will actually come to that a little later. But that system is actually visually also showing you the progress of how auto AI is training, what all factors of the data were important, how they were correlated. So it's not a black box system anymore, right? you should be able to see how it trained itself based on what data, what things were used. And that brings me to the next point. The most important point today is trustable AI. I think trustable AI, if I have to break it down, it has to be four different things. So it should be fairness. There should be a fairness in AI. And what that means is that the system that use the training data are free of bias. So it should not have too much of data. So let's say if I was to take gender bias, for example, in data, it should not have too many entries for males versus females in the data. It should have an equitable, not in the societal sense, but data should be able to train on both type of gender. There should be fairness in the data you feed to the system to be able to take care of the bias. The other thing that has to happen is it should be explainable, right? So whatever decision that comes out of an AI system in the form of machine learning model or deep learning model output, you actually should be able to say, oh, by the way, I got this approval for loan from an algorithm because maybe it was based on salary as a parameter as well as years of experience as a parameter. That's explainability should be there, right? And there should be auditability. It should be transparent. Every time the model is run, you should be able to see the historical details, logs, etc., which data was used to train it, which data was used to run it, which data was used to predict it, this whole, and we call it as a data lineage. It should be built into the system that humans, when they have to actually be able to use an AI system, they should be able to have auditability around it. And obviously it should be having a value alignment. So AI system should reason through different outcome. So it's more like they should be able to simulate different scenarios, discriminate between good and bad decision, and ensure the outcome is pretty the balanced one that probably is the best one given a scenario. So this is a very important one. We actually have a technology called Watson OpenScale. You can I would love all of you to really search for it. We are really, really proud of it. We have built this whole trusted operating model around AI, wherein when you train a model using Watson OpenScale, it actually does a bias detection. It does explainability around the models, and you can validate when it is running. You know, sometimes what happens is over a period of time, the accuracy of the model goes down, etc. It'll alert you that things are not within the parameters. You should probably retrain, etc. This is just a screenshot of how the output comes. It finds the fairness. If there is drift in data, what is the quality of the machine learning model running? How many times it has been run? How many times it was tested? How many tests were failed? All of those are measured. And this is part of the auto AI itself. So this runs in an auto AI fashion. Now, why this is important is because pretty soon when you will have a lot of usage in a production system of AI-driven decision management system, you will always want to find out, did anyone tamper with your system? So there should be robustness built into you. Should not be able to feed any kind of data, train the model in a certain way, and ask it to take decision. It should be a robust model. You should be able to trace who trained it, how they trained it, what data was fed to it. Then you should be able to find, is it fair? So it gives a fairness kind of a measurement. And is it easy to understand? Can we really take any model given by any company? Tomorrow, IBM may come to you or any other vendor may come to you and they may say, I have a really, really good model to be able to predict the trajectory of some missile or whatever, right? And are you going to trust that? Well, trust but verify. So verification probably may come through an explainability wherein you say, show me the performance of it. But by the way, because this is like a software black box, can I actually audit? Can I really see what decision, how the decision was arrived at to predict a certain outcome, right? That is what is going towards trusted AI. And let me tell again, this is called Watson OpenScale from IBM. Now, you would have heard a lot of in the previous session that the visual analytics has really, really improved. And based on deep learning, the outcomes have really gone to a next level. So if we were to analyze these pictures on the slide, today you can feed the data in the form of visual cues to a system and it can identify what is it. So it's a container ship versus a leopard, right? If you look at the bottom there, that is a screenshot of the Jeopardy scenario I talked to in the previous slide about inferential reasoning. this is a system. This was IBM Watson, and this is a screenshot of two humans, the champions who have been the best players of Jeopardy game. The system was winning against them. Look at the score, the money it could really garner. You can obviously search for this. There are YouTube videos that have been recorded and put up. So that's the other state of the art. Right top, you see the Tesla.
Sir, I would like you to keep some 2 to 3 minutes for the question answering session also for the engagement with the audience.
Certainly. So you see a Tesla car, which is on an autopilot mode. It is actually able to learn what vehicles are there. Then you see bottom that you are able to see that there is an AlphaGo system, which is actually able to defeat a human. You today have drones which have embedded camera as well as some machine learning algorithm running there, which can identify an image and say whether there is damage there or not. You have medical systems built in which can look at this color variations in an image and identify cancer there, right? A human would not be able to distinguish that easily. These are some of the images wherein systems are actually able to look at different objects and be able to describe them also. So for example, the system can look at, an AI system can look at this image of a person playing guitar and says, man in black shirt is playing guitar. AI has also learned different artistic skills. For example, you see the on the right side, when you see this female and you see one of the red colored kind of a brush artistic expression, the AI system can actually match these two together and it can give that artistic impression to an existing image or video feed, etc. Right? You see the bottom right side. That is the photo of Mandira Bedi. This I actually generated using a humanoid robot called Nao, N-A-O. And it took the picture through the camera. The camera is in forehead. And it actually took the Picasso painting. And it actually gave the artistic impression of that photo that was fed through the camera to the snapshot and actually print it out in a Picasso way. So the AI really, really is evolving to an extent wherein it can not only understand, but it can understand two different things and be able to merge them together. It is able to identify and segment images also. So it can say there is a horse, but it can also segment it in an image. If you look at the left bottom, that where exactly is the horse in the image. It can identify multiple objects with different variants of prediction levels. Even the speech recognition, let me share one nugget with you. Speech recognition, the way it happens through AI today. Sorry?
Actually, sir, we have the next speaker coming up actually. So, sir, is it possible for you to just complete the talk and we go for the one question answer and then question answer?
Certainly. Just give me 2 minutes. Let me quickly complete this. Even the speech recognition happens through a visual recognition technology. Speech is converted to a frequency graph, and the frequency graph is what actually is converted into speech recognition today. AI is also able to really take a photo of somebody or even a video feed and merge it with two different different characters and actually take, let's say, the lip movement that you're seeing on the left and make the same lip movement of the characters that you see. It can take one model, it can take different dress styles and actually apply it to those models. So you are generating totally new fashions on the fly. We are at a stage wherein AI is able to generate new game levels of Mario. That's one of the examples there. If I was to really take you to, from your point of view, tactical mission mode where AI is already mature enough, it can take documents and semantically understand in document what is being said. It can really identify even the graphs given in a PDF document and say whether the trend is good, bad, ugly, low or up. It can actually look at the images from a geospatial point of view, survey the map, it can target routes, etc. You can see where the crop is standing, where the crop has water, etc. is being shown here. Today, AI is able to make 3D conceptualization of let's say an operational area purely based on 2D images. So you just feed it camera images and it can make a 3D map out of that. That is where AI has already reached. It can target and track and segment outline real-time objects as you feed them. So in this case, it is able to identify the bone structure, where they are, where the hands are up or down, where the eyes are, and be able to segment them. It is also able to take two or three different logical graphs, put them together, and then actually merge them different ways. It has gone to an extent wherein you give it a scene, you give it a context, and it can describe that in a very, very succinct way, just like a poet. It has gone to extent, not only can it target movement, it can even segment the movement, where exactly is it happening. So in this case, this is a person who's skating. It's able to find out where the person is and also where the movement is happening. Latest one that we have seen is you can even feed the radio tracking data. And based on radio tracking data, there are AI models that exist. And I put the URL here. It is open source today, wherein it can even make a 3D image out of that. So it can know where exactly, what is the dimension of the object that you want to find just by the radio tracking data. And this is real time. So we're not talking about some technology which is available only with defense establishment and vendors. We're talking about open source code that is able to identify everything in a 3D world. I will stop at that and maybe go for questions now. I think I have a lot of slides to cover, but maybe we have less time. So let's probably take some questions now.
Thank you, sir. What is enlightening talk? Sir, actually your talk is so interesting that I've got lots of questions popping up. Sir, one question is from our audience that you say that AI has come to an edge. So why is there a perception that advances in hardware and cheaper availability has made AI possible at what level it is today?
Sorry, let me understand the question again. Was the question to say,
the question is that you said in your talk that AI has come to an edge, but why there is a perception now in among the audience that there is the advancement in hardware and cheaper availability has made AI at what level it is today?
So why it has happened is two things. Obviously, hardware plays big part. As I said, micro SD can today store 1 terabyte of data. So micro SD should be almost, well, probably even this size in phones you have those today. But more importantly, the processing power, the whole compute itself is pretty small today. So what that means is wherever you have edge devices, and I'm not talking about naval assets kind of thing. If I was to say naval asset can really be running the whole supercomputer on a ship. But I'm talking about tomorrow having an ability that you will have glasses, and the stick of the glass itself will have more computing power than probably this mobile today. So that is one advancement. The other advancement is the machine learning algorithms are very, very optimized. They need to, they probably don't need to run bigger piece of software code today. They can be actually in some megabyte size, and you can run them on the edge device itself rather than actually having to run on the cloud. These two, so the ability to run your machine learning, deep learning model in optimized fashion within a megabyte limit, and hardware which is minute in size and which can run as an edge device, both married together are the ones that are leading to it.
We will take one last question for this session. That what is there any work in natural language generation happening at IBM?
A lot of it. I think that's a motherhood question. The answer is yes, but you can be specific and I can answer that.
So would you like to describe what the work is going on in that direction?
So natural language, we are getting into a point. So I'll tell you where the problem is in natural language processing today.
So not language, I was talking about natural language generation.
Generation. Now, for the generation part, one of the things that we are doing and have launched that I highlighted earlier is Debater, wherein it can take data in the form of sentences, identify the entities, attributes, and the facts from the data, and it is able to generate new sentences based on that. So you're not feeding sentences in the form of argument to our Debater system. It is able to generate newer sentences based on that. And that is like a pretty advanced form of generation. So you're not just generating sentences. You are generating sentences based on factual data that somebody may ask as a question.
So
there is also an open source model for it, because for you guys, you may not want to get into everything which is proprietary. I think for this audience, I will say You can search for a term called DRQA, Dr. QA. It's an open source thing that we, a lot of companies have put together. I think Dr. QA is from Facebook, but a lot of developers within IBM have also worked on that kind of technology. What that does is you can give it a document, right, and ask it any question on a fact or an entity, and it will actually answer that. I hope I had time, but I would have shown you that live. I'm telling you again, it can take data and there is a model that has never seen that data before, and you can start asking factual questions from the data, and it will be able to answer on unstructured data in the form of document or whatever. So that is the level we have reached up to.
I would now formally would like to thank you, Sri Vishal Chahal, for the informative session and presenting a different perspective of artificial intelligence, machine learning, and deep learning. The topics covered in the session, such as areas of AI and dependencies, inferential reasoning, hype cycle of data science, and learning approaches, were very enlightening. Topics on generative AI, AI assistant, AI enforced learning, AI at edge were really interesting, and the topic AI for AI emerges on. On behalf of Commanding Officer INS Valsura, I express my sincere gratitude for conducting the session during the webinar. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for your time.